Welcome, everyone, to Tearing It Off with Megan and Mirage. And today we have a special guest, Reed Mahalko. How's it going, Reed?
It's going really well. I'm so excited to be your special guest.
You're our first special guest.
Yeah.
You never forget your first special guest.
That's what I hear.
Well, we're very excited to have you on the show and hear what you have to say about today's topic, which is going to be the goal of the orgasm, or the pursuit of the orgasm. I'm glad that makes you laugh.
It just sounds like an old Jacques Cousteau episode. We're like, today, while in pursuit of the elusive orgasm, you will dive deep in search. If we are lucky, we will see the great, great orgasm, and perhaps, too, the rarely seen simultaneous orgasm can be so beautiful. Join us now.
Wow, I don't think I can follow that anymore. I'm firing myself, that's it.
Oh.
I'm kidding, it's all good. You're not going to get rid of me that easily.
Okay, great.
So why don't we go into our word of the day today? Megan, what did you pick for us?
So I picked anorgasmic as our word of the day because people have a lot of questions in terms of, I don't think I can come. So I figured I would give the actual definition of what anorgasmic means because people are talking a lot about sexual dysfunctions in mainstream media.
Great, let's hear it.
So in women, it is defined as not having the ability to orgasm or not having orgasms. And interestingly, in men, it's having delayed orgasms. So those are the technical definitions. There's different reasons of why someone can be anorgasmic. Medications, whether it be store-bought or on the street, like heroin can cause difficulty having an orgasm.
Okay. Alcohol? Pot?
Alcohol can make it difficult. Yep. Whiskey dick is a very common phrase. And
that's one to add to the list.
Yep. Diabetes is something that can actually make it more difficult for people to have orgasms because of nerve damage, pelvic trauma. So there's lots of things that can happen in terms of causing somebody to be anorgasmic. And there's two ways of thinking about it. Has the person never had an orgasm, or are they having a difficult time having an orgasm now? So that's called primary anorgasmic or secondary anorgasmic.
Okay, great. Well, of course, that's relevant to our topic today, and I'm just going to go right into our first question. How do I make sure that me and my partner climax simultaneously? So what do you all have to say about that? Reed?
Oh, goodness, there's so many jokes, and this really isn't even funny. I mean, a lot of it, for people who really make that a kind of an important thing, like I really, really want to experience that my partner and I come at the same time. My best advice is go really slow and try to learn each other's bodies and your arousal and get a sense of how you both react and get to climax. Like, it's kind of like that Carnegie Hall, like practice, practice, practice. That's how you get the simultaneous orgasm. And, I mean, encourage both you and your partner to talk a lot so that you guys can learn about this, to try to learn your partner's, you know, ability to climax and how they get aroused and achieve orgasm. Try to learn that without them offering hints and you guys talking about it. Next to near impossible.
Right. So it's not something that could happen on a first encounter, right? Or could it?
In the movies, it can.
Yeah, in the movies it can. I mean, I've certainly had partners where the first time we had sex, we both got off, you know, nearly at the same time. I've for those of you who are tuning in going, like, who is this guy? You know, I do a lot of coaching around sex and group sex and all kinds of things. So, I mean, I've even had simultaneous orgasms in threesomes where all three of us came at the same time. But it's so freaking rare that I think the best advice is to just let that, when it happens, let it happen and celebrate it. But try to not make that like the goal. Like, don't be so goal-oriented that you get stuck in your own head about trying to get off at the same time that's the thing that starts to prevent that from ever happening. Like, really just enjoy the fact that you guys are having sex at all in this day and age, because a lot of people aren't, and really enjoy the pleasure that you're getting out of being intimate. Ree, and not make it a goal.
Can I? I'm going to ask a personal question.
Sure.
Were those simultaneous orgasms better than having regular orgasms at separate times with your partner?
No. Goodness, no. They were just really cool. Like, it was like, wow, we did it. Like, you know, huzzah. But
it's a magic trick.
Yeah,
almost.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of a magic trick in a lot of ways. And so I'm just happy that anyone's having sex with me ever.
I think a lot of people feel that way. Not about you having sex with other people, but getting somebody to touch them. People are really happy if they get touched in general. And I think that, you know, to kind of bounce off of that, like, people just want to be touched. And orgasm should be like a fun surprise.
A reward, but not necessarily the goal at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. That's what you were talking about, is we need to stop being so goal-orientated in terms of how we play with people.
Yeah, and because it gets in the way. Like, we take that alpha American mentality and start applying it to our sex lives, and we don't get to ever go slow and just enjoy and let orgasm kind of happen that way. It's like the difference between going for a nice leisurely walk and actually seeing your surroundings versus this mad sprint to the finish line. We don't actually get to enjoy each other.
So there's no like finite finish line that has to be reached necessarily. You get a gold medal anyway.
Maybe it should be approached like Sunday afternoons, like lazy and kind of slovenly and enjoying and soaking in things. Maybe we should kind of approach sex if you have those types of Sundays. Maybe if you're a type B. Or maybe if you're a type A, you can plan to have lazy sex or enjoyable sex.
Well, what you can do is, if you really are a type A, or if you're dating somebody who is a type A, have them turn that type A goal-orientated quality towards slowing it down. Like, use your natural propensity to be goal-oriented, but just redirect it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, try to, you know, have sex. Like, stay in bed for the whole morning, but try to not have orgasms. Like, try to tease each other so much and get really close to orgasm and kind of edge it, you know, and then pull back, and then, like, just drive each other crazy with wanting to get off. Like, I've coached people in that direction. Like, you really can't untangle the goal-oriented piece. Just redirect it, because it can be used as a strength. It doesn't have to be this curse. But certainly as Americans and in a couple of other cultures, like, you know, it's all about the big O.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be. And in most of the cases, it shouldn't be. But also don't make having orgasms the enemy either.
Right. Right, of course. It's a nice bet. We have to try to create a balance, which is something that people struggle with all the time, not just with sex, but just in general.
Right, and I think that there's no, like, finite definition of what sex is or should be. It's just, we all have different definitions. Megan and I were talking about this earlier. When does it start, right? It can start at kissing. It can start when you start using your fingers. It can start when you say hello.
It can start when the radio show starts. We're having sex right now, right?
Exactly. So as long as everyone's enjoying themselves, that's great.
Yes. I like
that. And just to add in, too, that I think for the untangling the goal-orientedness of orgasm, I think, can be really helpful for a lot of men and male-bodied people, because we're acculturated in a certain way that we need proof that she had fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the orgasm is one of those kind of go-to ways of telling if we did a good job.
Right.
And we're kind of invested in doing a good job in bed. So making it not about the orgasm, but really just about giving her partner, or giving her or him, if you speak sense, giving them pleasure, and making pleasure just be something a lot broader than just the orgasm, that can actually, that adjustment can turn you into 10 times a better lover. You don't really have to do anything different. And just adjusting your how you orient from orgasm away from that to just pleasure in general, for a lot of people, makes them seem so much better in bed, because then they're not so focused and they're just giving their partners pleasure to begin with, which is really the point.
Right.
I think that goes into our second question.
Yeah. So let's just go into our second question. My partner seems to get upset or disappointed when they can't make me come. How can I convince him or her I'm having a good time?
Megan, do you want to jump on that one?
Sure, I like jumping on things. So, I had this conversation with a friend recently in which she was talking about playing with her lover, and her lover is having a hard time having orgasms. And instead of, and my friend's very sex positive and knows how to talk the talk and embrace being sex positive and playing and pleasure, but her partner isn't necessarily of that background, doesn't have that background. So instead of being like, okay, not having an orgasm, her partner gets very angry and is like, stop. I just want to stop the behavior. I don't want to do this because I think on some level it means failure for that person who's not having an orgasm. And my friend came up with a brilliant strategy of going down on the partner. And when the person was like, no, stop, this isn't happening, she's like, oh, I'm sorry. Do you not like me touching you? Should I stop touching you? And the person was like, no, I like you touching me. And she's like, oh, okay. Well, if you like me touching you, I'm really enjoying touching you. And that's what's making me happy. And her partner acknowledged that and ended up having an amazing orgasm for the very first time. And they had played together for a while. So she took the pressure off of having the orgasm and was like, I'm just enjoying your body. And that's one way that this can be addressed, I think.
And I really like that example because often when I see this question, I think, oh, in the way that I think about things, that, oh, it's harder for a woman to come, so that should be the goal, whereas men should just come, you know, they should be minute men, they should come instantly, so when they don't, it's a problem, and, you know, it's just a different perspective. Whereas in your example, it's the case of a male person who couldn't come, and how do you handle that? It happens too.
Right. And I think, I mean, like, even with the way that we gave for the word of the day, the definitions, it's women can't come and men have a delayed reaction in
right.
coming.
Exactly.
So it reinforces those stereotypes.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about this, Reed?
I agree with the advice that you're already giving. And I think, you know, just to underscore again, it's really about untangling this idea that the orgasm is the end all be all, and just kind of reframing it as whatever feels good. And if you happen to come, great. And if you don't happen to come, you know, we still got to have sex,
right?
Which is a lot, you know, further ahead than a lot of people on a day-to-day basis. And really just celebrating being able to play and really just kind of, you know, trying to make sex not so serious and make it more playful. And you know, I love using the word frolic.
You know, that is a great
kind
word.
Of goofing off in bed, which again, you know, I coach a lot of men around how to be better lovers for their female partners. And a lot of the advice boils down to like, dude, chill the fuck out.
Right.
And be playful, because women don't really get a chance to sleep with men who really just want to play, whether that's wrestling and just making out and then goofing off and then getting hot and heavy. You know, and certainly I've you know, had situations where my partner wants me to come and I'm just in that place where I'm not going to be able to, you know, and I teach sex for a living, and it's still kind of hard on my psyche because, Mirage, like you said, like, we're kind of acculturated to be these minute men. And we're supposed to be ready to fire at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, to cast an even wider net on the advice is talk about these things with each other. And, you know, encourage your partner to have a conversation about what bothers them, what they're tense about, you know, why is them getting off or them getting you off so important? And really kind of get those conversations out in the open, because the not talking about it is probably the worst thing you can do ever to begin with. And so many people in our culture don't talk about sex ever because they think that talking about it means there's a problem. And I think the problem is that we're not talking about it more.
Yeah, I agree. And I tend to recommend people not to talk about it immediately after when there's nudity and like you're laying in the same spot. Like, get some distance from it to make it less intense. If you're having a hard time having the conversation, try to talk about it, you know, in random locations where you've got lots of distractions for your eyes. And, you know, car trips are amazing because you have to kind of look forward, but it's a way for people to talk about what they're thinking about.
Yeah, car trips are great. I think emails can be great too. Mm-hmm. Like, getting your thoughts down on email, especially if you have long distance relationships.
Skype could just be good, right?
You know, Skype's great too.
Although you have to look at each other at that point. Well, not really. Yeah, you can kind of look at yourself and then, or the wall, and it sort of looks like you're looking at your partner.
Huh.
But it's really like, you know, and Megan, your advice is really sound. Like, don't do it right in bed. Like, and also, don't do it right before you go to sleep. You know, because I think having those heavy conversations in bed right when your other partner is trying to go to sleep, that's kind of not the best time for it. And especially, you know, if you're anchoring having conversations about your sex life problems when you're actually in the place that you usually have the sex, isn't always the best idea. So, you know, car trips are great. I love your advice, Megan, about having difficult conversations while you're grocery shopping.
People really get angry with that.
I think it's great. Like, it just gives cucumbers a whole new meaning.
I know. I was just going to say, everything you look at just has a new connotation.
See, I break out in hives all the time, and so I really like the freezer aisle because I can open the door and then cool my you know, hives down if I get too worked up.
That's true. It's a good tip. Well, I guess the lesson to learn from this is, if you're going to have any goal, it should just be to enjoy yourself and not define that pleasure or that enjoyment by orgasm or very specific actions. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Totally agree. Yeah. And then, again, like you said, like, and also, don't make orgasm the bad guy or the bad girl. It's just another great part of sex. Don't make it so not the goal that you somehow turn it into an anathema.
Right. Definitely. Okay, well, let's move on to our fact of the day. What can we bring from all of this conversation?
So there's been a lot of talk about medications that you could use to enhance your sexual ability or your ejaculations or the way that you taste. And so I think I'm going to kind of go with this. And so I wanted to put out the fact that orgasms and ejaculations are separate functions in all genders.
Okay.
So someone can have an orgasm and not ejaculate. They could ejaculate and not have an orgasm, or they could orgasm and have an ejaculation at the same time. And a lot of people, I think a lot of people think about them, they're like, oh, okay, get it for women. But for men, in terms of male-bodied individuals, they're like, whoa, what is that all about?
Is the intensity different, or are they just separate?
Say more about that. What do you mean, the intensity?
Would an orgasm for a man, for example, be more intense if it occurs at the same time as ejaculation, or is it just different? There are different types of orgasms for women, right? Like, there's clitoral and vaginal, but would that be just a different kind of orgasm for men, or?
So the ejaculation wouldn't, if we're talking about if they're not having an ejaculation in them?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so it wouldn't be as intense because it doesn't have the orgasmic response. So there's just a release of fluid.
Would you agree as a man, Reed?
I've had several different types of orgasms in my sexual career. And they're all very, very different. I mean, the types of orgasms that you can have, especially for people that are kind of interested in tantra and sacred sexuality and Taoist sexual practices, you can certainly have orgasms where you're not having the musculature engaged, where, you know, your body's actually pumping out semen and ejaculate. So those orgasms are kind of weird the first time you have them, because it's like, wow, that felt like an orgasm, but there wasn't any cum involved. And I think most men, because we grow up with many of our first sexual experiences being solo, and, you know, having proof of our orgasm because we have ejaculate, that when you have an orgasm that has no ejaculation involved, you kind of disbelieve that it actually happened. And sometimes, you know, around tantra and kind of like energetic orgasms. You have these really fulfilling experiences, but without your pelvic floor muscles, you know, pumping and spasming, it kind of don't feel like it counted. And in actuality, it really did. Those would be the two biggest differences that I would be able to point to.
Okay, great. Or I was just thinking you could think back to the time when you masturbated before you could actually come, right? I mean, that must have happened for men. Maybe not always, but...
No, well, it that harkens to the days of climbing swing sets and ropes in gym class. And I was kind of the fat kid, so I wasn't really good at pulling myself up.
Uh-huh.
So I would kind of like hump the gym rope. And, you know, eventually, now looking back, I'm going like, goodness, it's so obvious that I was just humping the gym rope. What's going on? But it felt great.
Kind of like standing in front of the water pool jet in the pools. I remember that as a child being like, oh, that feels nice. I think I'll stay there for a while.
Megan, you need to use that voice all the time. All right, well, Reed, thank you so much for joining us today.
And we can learn more about Reed at readaboutsex.com, right?
Yep, it's readaboutsex.com.
Yes.
Perfect. Well, thanks for joining us, and Reed, Megan, and myself for our new episode on Tearing It Off.
All about orgasms and having fun.
Let's have this threesome again soon, shall we?
Sounds good.
With pleasure. It really worked out.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And remember, have fun playing.